What kind of problems did you encounter, let's say, within the chemical engineering department?
None.
Everyone was...
None.
Okay.
So. No, I had no... no feelings of competition or rivalry or anything like that. It was an entirely different field from the rest of chemical engineering, and I guess most of the people in the chemical engineering department were glad that their department had been selected out of, I guess there were eight, or at that time seven, different engineering departments in the School of Engineering, that chemical engineering would be the one that was given this rather than civil or mechanical or even the physics department itself. There was some rivalry between us and the physics department because the physicists felt that they were the pioneers, and indeed they were. There were also the people that felt they knew goddamn much more about nuclear reactors than those chemical engineers that were just sort of on the fringes, and they were right there too. But I had very good collaboration with Clark Goodman, who taught nuclear physics to the physicists, and also taught the first courses in nuclear physics for engineers sponsored by our department. So it worked out fine. MIT is a very broad-minded school where there isn't a lot of the interdepartmental rivalry that you find in some other universities.
You gave the first PhD in... I'm just looking at chronology. First MS in 1953. 55, decision to make the build the reactor.
56. First PhD in 56.
57, I have here 57 was the first PhD.
You're probably right.
The reactor began operating in 58.
Yep, July 1st, 1958. I remember it as if it was yesterday.
Okay. So that's a very rapid sequence of events occurring in a short period of time.
Enrollment in the department was increasing rapidly during that period of time. And the best thing that happened was when the Atomic Energy Commission took over from the Manhattan Project, so much of the basic technology was declassified so that it was possible to incorporate the material, which up to that point had required clearance, into the instruction of students. And we got not only U.S. citizens, but also students from other countries that wanted to learn about this new technology. We had students from England and France and Germany and Italy, Japan, Korea, even one from the Philippines.
When, the department itself was formed in 58, and you were its first head for 13 years or something like that.
Yeah.
When was that decision? What were the criteria that allowed that decision to be made, to split you off as a full-fledged department as opposed to being within
chemical engineering? Well, it was largely internal in my department, and it wasn't of my doing. I recognized that our department, to teach nuclear engineering, would have to have people that had background other than the chemical engineering background that myself and Pickford had, the first two beginners of the department. I was partially diversified by having been trained as a physical chemist, but I knew we were badly in need of physicists, and I knew we needed mechanical and civil engineers too. And I tried to hire people with those backgrounds to go to work in the chemical engineering department. They would have none of it, and quite properly they felt that they would be out of touch with their own colleagues. And by that time, Cliff Beck had started a nuclear engineering department at the North Carolina State University in Raleigh, North Carolina, and was making a great success of it, was attracting a number of students, and was having a very good program. So with that as an example, I was able to convince the then Dean of Engineering, Tom Sherwood, who had been a colleague of mine in the chemical engineering department, that we needed to have a separate department of nuclear engineering, otherwise I'd never be able to attract physicists and civil engineers and other people that were needed to teach this new discipline. And he agreed, and he persuaded the then president of MIT, Carl Taylor Compton, that it was time to, and our enrollment had begun to increase to the point where we could become a separate department. It's time to split us off from chemical engineering and make a separate department of it, which was done in, I guess it was July 1st, 1958, if I have my dates right. We became a separate division of chemical engineering on July 1st, 1957, and we became a separate department on July 1st, 1958. That's correct. And I served as the department head for 13 years until 1971, and my retirement was coming up in 1973. So I felt I didn't want to serve until the very last day. It was time to bring somebody else in before I stepped down. And that's when Ed Mason took over from me.
As you started to produce your first students in 57 and subsequent years, what kind of employment opportunities were there for them, especially in those early days?
Well, those changed a lot from the early days. In the early days, there were mostly the Atomic Energy Commission and the very few power companies which were then designing nuclear power plants. Commonwealth Edison was one of our prime sources of employment. We sent a number of students out there. We didn't send very many to the people in the nuclear fuel cycle, even though that was the branch of the subject that I was most familiar with myself. We did have a few go to work for, gosh, I can't remember. I used to have a record of where all of our students went, but I don't have that anymore. I can't remember some of the companies that employed them.
Well, I asked that because I was curious about attracting students to a new program. You said the enrollments were increasing right along.
Well, the subject was such a popular topic in those days. The newspapers were full of it, but very bright young people felt that there was a real future in that field. But there wasn't until a lot of technology was declassified. I can't remember just the year in which that took place, but that made a big difference. Mm-hmm. Prior to that time, most of the employment was with companies that had required security clearance for their students, or with foreign governments or companies like Electricité de France, who needed to have people who were trained in as much of the U.S. nuclear technology as the government was willing to allow us to show with foreign nationals, share with foreign nationals.
When did the private sector power companies enter on the scene
to the extent that
it affected what you were doing? In your
gosh, I can't remember the year. I'm sorry about that.
But there was a point when
the field took off. But I just can't remember. I'm not sure it was mentioned in this brief biography. I think it was in the early 1970s, but I'm just not that sure of it. I don't think it's given in either of these.
What's the current status of the department? Has it fallen on hard times, given what's happened in recent years?
No. It's maintained its enrollment at about some 200 students. It's teaching both an undergraduate and a graduate degree. It didn't have an undergraduate program when I was a professor there. The undergraduate program is not very well attended. They get only a few students a year. But the graduate program, as far as I'm not in very close touch with it anymore, but I think it's still kept something like 200 students enrolled, which is quite sufficient. In fact, it's not the smallest student of the engineering school. Aeronautics and, no, naval architecture was always smaller than we were, and I think still is. And the students have no trouble finding employment. Some of them have advanced to vice presidencies, and in one case, the presidency of a company, so I guess their education would serve them well.
Yes. What kind of support did you have for your graduate students?
Well, for many years, the Atomic Energy Commission had fellowships in nuclear engineering, which were awarded on a competitive basis, in which our students were quite successful in obtaining, or sometimes students from other schools would get a fellowship that allowed them to choose their school, and they came to MIT. In addition, there goes my wife.
Oh.
In addition, faculty members sought and succeeded in getting research projects from various companies, both those that were producing reactors or materials or had nuclear power plants of their own. Commonwealth Edison, again, was quite helpful in providing us with research funding. I've lost touch with the department now, and I don't really know where its sources of support come from now. But in the beginning, they were very glad to both provide support for our instruction or our research, and also to have that contact with MIT, which permitted them to come to us and pick our brains.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about some of your AEC activity, but maybe we should also talk a little bit about your membership in the General Advisory Committee. You were appointed by President Eisenhower. Is that correct?
Back
in 58.
I served on that committee from 58 to 68, and I guess I served on its successor from 68 to 73. Didn't my biography say that or something? Let me see.
This just says 58 to 68, and then...
Yeah, here it is. From 48 to 58, I was a member of the Atomic Energy Commission's Reactor Safeguard Committee and a successor, the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards.
Okay.
In 58, Eisenhower appointed me to the General Advisory Committee of the AEC. I served on that committee until 1968 and was its chairman from 62 to 64.
What was the function of that committee, the General Advisory Committee?
Well, that was a committee that reviewed all of the activities of the AEC, not just its reactor safety problems, but everything that it did, from mining of uranium ore to the production of fissionable materials to the design of power reactors, to the conduct of biomedical research, to the development of extremely high voltage accelerators, the whole bit, everything that the Atomic Energy Commission was putting money into. And for many years, and probably is still true, although I lost track of it, It was a wide spectrum of all the research that's conducted, I mean, of all the fields of research that are conducted in the country. At any rate, it was a very valuable way of keeping my, well, knowledge of nuclear engineering, which could easily have become somewhat obsolete from so doing, because I was right in touch with the latest developments, both in the governmental and in the civilian field, because we had many opportunities to visit companies that were running nuclear power plants or producing nuclear materials.
Did you ever have contact with Admiral Rickover in this regard?
Oh, yes. Didn't I ever mention that? Wasn't that in any of this?
No, I didn't.
Really?
No.
Oh, dear, I've written that up somewheres. I'd much rather find what I wrote than try to drag it out of my memory. I sure did. No, so much of this stuff is missing here.
Well,
I should have had. But anyway, you've asked the question, and I'll tell you what I can remember about it.
Okay.
Our first students who enrolled in nuclear, well, at any rate, MIT got into nuclear engineering largely because Rickover had selected promising naval officers to acquire an education in this new technology and assign a few of them each year to MIT. He had other schools that he sent them to also. And they first worked in the physics department because the physics department taught nuclear physics and there wasn't any instruction in nuclear engineering in the engineering school. And when they came back to him after having had their MIT education, he would quiz all of them to find out what they knew and what they didn't know. And he was appalled to find that even though they went to a preeminent engineering school, their education at MIT was largely nuclear physics. So he felt that MIT should provide an engineering education to his chosen naval officers and conveyed that view with appropriate colorful language, I assume, to the Dean of Engineering, who was then, God, why is my memory so poor? Oh, a very famous chemical engineer. I can see his face in front of me. Well, I'm sorry, I can't remember who the man was. But at any rate, he recognized that Rickover had a proper objection to the kind of education MIT was giving these people. Tom Sherwood, that's who it was,
okay.
Who had been in the chemical engineering department until he became dean of engineering. And urged Sherwood to see that his naval officers were given appropriate instruction among the different departments of the engineering school that would round out their education in physics. He wasn't against them learning nuclear physics, but he felt they ought to know heat transfer and fluid flow and materials properties and things of that kind as well. So Sherwood called a meeting, I'm told, of the heads of the 8 engineering schools in those days, which included chemical engineering or civil engineering and electrical engineering and mechanical engineering and aeronautical engineering and food engineering and I don't know what other engineering subjects. And they put their heads together to try to see which one would serve as the environment for starting this new instruction. Well, Walter Whitman had just served a tour of duty as, was he general manager for the Atomic Energy Commission? He had some important role in this new organization in Washington. And he recognized this as a golden opportunity for the chemical engineering department to break into a new field. So I guess he made the most appropriate or most persuasive pitch for providing a home for this new department and was assigned as his first mentor. So I may have told you this before, and if you have, why, I'll skip over it, but he then cast about for somebody to start this new program. He assigned one of his then junior faculty members, Tom Pigford, to go to Oak Ridge as the professor in charge of MIT School for Chemical Engineering Practice at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, feeling sure that Tom would pick up nuclear engineering that way. And he wanted somebody else of a more senior capacity. Tom was had just got his doctor's degree, to serve as Tom's colleague and senior faculty member in the department. And Whitman had been a consultant to the M.W. Kellogg Company. I have a feeling I've told you this before.
Parts of it, but why don't you continue and we can always...
I know I've told you this before. He came down one day to consult with us on this flow calorimeter that I had designed, which was going to be a lot more successful than the Collins calorimeter because at the high temperature we operated, it had to have thermal insulation rather than just radiant insulation. And he was there when I assembled the calorimeter for the first time, and the fact that it went fitted together perfectly made such a lasting impression on him that when he needed somebody to start nuclear engineering at MIT, he knew that I was the man. Oh dear. Hi, Marge.
Hi.
We're still being interviewed.
Well,
goodness, are you still at it?
Yes.
Hope you've had something to eat.
Yes, we did. We're back for lunch. And
excuse us for not getting up for you.
I'm going to get my hair done in a few minutes.
Oh, you are. You take a shower
later.
First. You wouldn't believe that we've been married now for 56 years, would you?
It's marvelous. It really is.
Lucky us.
Yes, I'll say.
And neither of us were very young when we were married either.
My parents just celebrated their 60th this last year.
Good
so,
for them.
I'm sort of at the end of my list of questions. I had about 8 pages here, and I've slowly gone through what I had.
Good. I didn't realize we'd taken up that many, but I'm glad we covered them all.
But is there anything else along these lines that you would like to add that we haven't
discussed? Well, the last sentence in this brief narrative autobiography is the... one that I'd like to emphasize on you. I would like most to be remembered for the part I played in engineering 500 men and women who studied nuclear engineering at MIT while he was a faculty member there and who are now contributing to the development and use of this important energy source.
Well, I think maybe on that note we'll close at this point.
Okay, fair enough.
I appreciate your spending all this time with me.
Well, I appreciate and am flattered that you felt it was worth this much of your time.
Oh.
Now, is there anything I can do to help your subsequent